You're listening to a 95 BFM podcast.
Furious Artists with Francis and Liam. So you can go to the opening for more than just the snacks.
We are currently a week away from the Aotearoa general election, and the majority of parties still don't actually have a clear arts and culture policy. It's been a bit of an apathetic mood for arts and politics recently, with Auckland Mayor Wayne Brown threatening to cut back the funding for our local arts centres until there were campaigns against it. We also only saw one politician show up to the Upper Silver Scrolls on Wednesday night, and unsurprisingly, it was Auckland Central MP Chloe Swarbrick. Thankfully, after we reached out to every major party, Chloe was also the only MP willing to chat to us about their arts and culture policy. We recorded this during Fancy New Band, so sorry about the surfy backing track.
Top line of the Greens arts and culture policy is that we can have a thriving arts and cultural ecosystem if we uphold the people who actually make that a reality, but also ensure that we're looking after and ensuring access to the places and spaces where not only performance happens, but studio spaces and everything else. So yeah, in a nutshell, it's about making sure that we actually value arts, culture and creativity as fundamental, not just to who we are as people, who we are as communities, but also even from a right-wing economic perspective, value and recognize the inherent economic contribution.
So a big part of this, I guess, before we get into that more economic side of things, is the conversation about specifically just adequately resourcing the arts. Mm-hmm. What does this look like in theory to you outside of just pushing money into the sector?
Yeah, I think when we're talking about resourcing the sector adequately, there's a few different parts that we can pull apart there. So I think first things first, it's really important for us to also recognise that far too much of our arts and cultural sector is reliant on what is effectively lotteries and therefore gambling funding. And that comes from historical decisions that were made around ring fencing pokies and gambling money and enabling that to then go into community projects. But I think that that kind of tether creates perverse incentives for example, the giving of greater licenses to, for example, pokie machines, which we know disproportionately cause harm in lower income communities. And this is actually a really live discussion that we had around, for example, the cannabis legalization and control bill, where we were looking at potentially ring fencing the revenue generated by selling legal regulated cannabis and putting that into harm reduction. But what we found is that you can create perverse incentives in that way, in such a way that you incentivize the selling of more of that thing that might cause social harm because you're trying to generate the revenue to pay for the good thing. So if we disaggregate that and we also create a national strategy for arts, culture and creativity, then we can say this is the baseline that we want funded in our arts and cultural sector, regardless of whoever is in power. And I'd imagine that coming across the line in a bipartisan or cross-partisan manner in the same way that the Zero Carbon Act was.
Part of that is also including the current state of New Zealand media, which has definitely had a very messy past few years with the RNZ TVNZ merger pretty much failing, the fallout of Today FM like 1 year after its inception, and after that point, even here at 95BFM, kind of the funding struggles that we have had.
Yep.
For media specifically, how do you think that we can improve our current system to make sure that people can actually keep their jobs?
Yeah, again, this really does boil down to resourcing, and I wouldn't be able to give you figures off the top of my head, but what I would be able to say is that in the initial discussions around the TVNZ-RNZ merger, I was around the table with the Honourable Minister Chris Farfoy at the time as our broadcasting spokesperson and said, hey, you know what? No one's actually really calling for this. We are calling for sustainability of our media, but we're not saying that this is necessarily the methodology to achieve that outcome. And what I proposed at that point in time was using the resources set aside for it to invest in the SRN, the Student Radio Network, because I think that that's what happens when you take a step back and you say, what is the ecosystem that feeds a live and unique and New Zealand specific, but also a thriving and independent media sector where our stories are able to be told by the very communities that they need to be told by, not on behalf of.
The biggest difference between this and the last election talks that we're going through there is the economic state of Aotearoa, the fact that it's a buzzline, but we are in a cost of living crisis and it's so much harder to put food on the table, and that does make things so much more difficult for artists who want to be spending as much time as possible, obviously doing their work, but they're taking on 2-3 part-time jobs, oftentimes studying as well, oftentimes doing volunteer work, oftentimes doing this. Pretty much just the conversation around the cost of living and how we support the arts is so intersected right now. And how do you think that supporting the arts, like you mentioned before, from a sort of more right-wing perspective, will be able to boost our economy?
We know that arts and culture contributes billions in terms of its value to this country's economy. But the other thing that I need to say is, if we look at this from a macro perspective and really interrogate what it is that we're talking about the economy, because politicians often use that as a refrain or an excuse as to why we can't do certain things without actually explaining what it is that they're talking about. My favourite game is get the politician to explain the economy. And what the Greens are talking about is all people and the things that we create and the planet that we live on and the resources that we use and the rules and the regulations and the laws and the tax systems and the incentives and the subsidies that we put in place to produce certain outcomes that we decide that we want to produce or not. And the irony is that we have been chasing this concept of GDP for the past 40 plus, or actually nigh on 70 years. And GDP is simply a metric of how many transactions are occurring within the economy. It doesn't give you any meaningful insight into the value of those transactions, i.e. whether we actually want them in the first place, nor the distribution of them, i.e. GDP could continue going up, but we could have the greatest rates of wealth inequality that we've ever had on record, such as we currently do. And this is where I think that there is such an amazing opportunity that many of our artists already grab with both hands, which is to force us to interrogate this notion of the system that we live inside of and to not take it for granted. So actually I see that there's a massive opportunity for artists within the revolution such that they enable us to reimagine what an economy that is premised on looking after both people and the planet could look like. And these, of course, have been thematics that have been undertaken by the likes of Kate Raworth, Oxford economist, who proposed donut economics.
Yeah, and I mean, part of it is also, I mean, you mentioned how it's like, oh, well, this is a great opportunity for artists to be able to do their side of campaigning even without a budget or anything like that, which we've very recently over the past few weeks seen Dignity and Money Now plus Basement put on their Artists Make Auckland, Artists Make Tamaki, Artists Make Aukilani,
yeah,
which has been an incredible campaign that's been so lovely to see, but it's also a bit hard to see how it's like artists have to become walking billboards for themselves to at least kind of start the conversation around arts funding.
And that's where I'd love to see us thinking about our artists in the same way that we think about our rugby stars, that we think about sports in this country, right?
And speaking of, I guess, just the political approach to the arts, the Silver Scrolls were on Wednesday night, which included invites for yourself, Kamal Cipollone, Chris Hipkins, people across the political spectrum to support what is possibly the biggest night of Aotearoa music, and you were the only one that showed up.
The bar is so low, man. Honestly, I gotta say, it was such an awesome night, and also just one of those things where I'm always loath to say that one kind of symbolic event is and should be the be-all and end-all of how people interpret, you know, what politicians or political parties stand for. But the reality is that that kind of presence at an event like that wasn't happening in a vacuum. It was also happening in the context of us being the only political party that's come to this election so far with a comprehensive arts and culture policy. And I think that that's also where the focus should go. The fact that our politicians aren't turning up to events is one thing and should be scrutinised in its own right, but the fact that there isn't that systemic impetus for change nor that consideration of substantive parts of our community, I think, is a far bigger issue.
You're also the only political party that agreed to do an interview with us to talk about the arts.
Well, does that give us a disproportionate platform? I don't know. But I think, again, if there was genuine, meaningful recognition of just how much value this provides, again, not only economically, but also to our communities, to reflect ourselves, to be critic and conscience, then all political parties should be coming to the table.
And I guess for the model that you guys are proposing for arts and culture for Aotearoa, can you think of any international examples that we could kind of maybe model ourselves off of that does a really good job at supporting the arts within the country or even regionally within Aotearoa, especially with, say, a more indigenous focus or just a well-rounded, something that would be well-suited to Aotearoa, basically?
I've got to say that we have a particularly unique context here in Aotearoa where we do have a role to play in terms of not just copy and pasting what's happened in other jurisdictions. We do have to provide meaningful, not only consultation, but, oh, is this a scary word for the ACT party? Co-governance, power sharing, redistribution of power and resource to be able to create something that is meaningfully and contextually and geographically relevant to who we are and the stories that we want to tell. So I would point to what's occurred in Australia recently with their years-long mahi to get their national art strategy under underway, and now with that being deployed and a substantive pot of money that's been put alongside that to operationalise it. But I'd also say that there's an incredible opportunity here to collaborate with local government as well. You know, in the midst of the beginning of this year with the austerity budget proposals from Mayor Wayne Brown and Auckland Council, which initially looked at shaving off discretionary funds to our local boards, which do put on a number of kind of shows and activate spaces, which of course then help to employ our artists and creatives, but also to make our places vibrant, let alone the funding that has been allocated to, for example, Tātaki Auckland Unlimited for economic development, again, largely through a lens of arts and culture, to Eke Panuku and to others for activating our streets. That was an assault on, a war on our arts and culture, on the vibrancy that fills the spaces that make the city more than bricks and mortar. And that's why I think it's really important that we're not only focused on what we're doing at a central government level, but also what that interaction looks like with our large councils and our smaller councils as well. Because, you know, there is also an equity question here for what happens with regard to access for people in our regional communities who don't necessarily have the opportunities as presented by living in a large city like Tāmaki Makaurau.
And we're running out of time, but I guess just to quickly close out, to put you on the spot a wee bit, what has been some of your favourite arts that have come out of specifically Tāmaki Makaurau as of recent?
Oh, my favourite arts? Well, I was thinking just before about how I've spent a lot of time underground in the catacombs underneath St Kev's Arcade of late. As we all have. Have seen some I'm Gonna Dick Move tonight with their new album launched, that song Wet, which is a great ode to the lack of enforcement around the healthy home standards, rental warrant of fitness now. DC Maxwell, a very phenomenal and memorable show down there. Seen Jasmine Mary play there. I've missed actually a lot of Avant-Del bowling club's gigs all across the country. I was trying to chase them to be there. But
Morningside,
that's Melbourne I've been
up.
Jamming. Morningside. I feel actually very lucky to be in a city where I genuinely love the live music that we get access to. And then, you know, Auckland Central is, you know, home to Basement Theatre, to our comedy clubs, to Q Theatre, to many, many places and spaces that are doing phenomenal things, but they deserve the recognition and support to be accessible and inclusive for all.
Yeah, and even here right now we have the beautiful backing track of Junior Junior. But no, thank you so much, Chloe Swarbrick, for coming onto the show and for talking to us about arts and culture when no one else will.
And back your local campaign, I'd say. Dignity and Money Now are doing some awesome stuff. The Artists Make Tāmaki campaign is dope. Let's organise.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.